Okay, so the exam is tomorrow in room 100. In the material science building. And a few of you taking ECE 310 or 313, I forgot which one. Was it 310 or 313?
313.
313. We'll come and start the exam 15 minutes earlier. There is space and availability for that. So it's the same deal as before. You know the notation, I mean the format. You know that you can bring three sheets of formulas, and you can bring a calculator this time around if you want to bring that. And then next week, Wednesday, is our last lecture, and then there's going to be a final exam on Saturday from 1 to 3, and that will take place in the ECE auditorium, 151, same place where we took the other exams. Tomorrow's exam is going to cover everything through the homework that you are handing in today. That means bounce diagrams are in and everything else is in, okay? Yesterday we started, after finishing my discussion of bounce diagrams, the discussion of resonant microwave circuits, and we're going to continue with that, and that topic is not included, okay? So resonances, infinite number of resonances that we're going to be talking about today are not included. That will be part of the final exam. And let's see where we are. Okay, so let's look at this equation once again. This is something that we already finished. But a lot of students came yesterday and asked me, why is it that we have an even more succinct than what you see on the blackboard, but it is related to that. Why is it that on the transmission line, if there is a voltage defined, V of CT, and there is a current defined, I of CT, and that current on the other wire is going in the other direction, but there is one expression, okay? Why is it that you always write this as V plus plus V minus, and you always write this as V plus minus V minus divided by zeta? They're asking this, okay? And I say, hey, because we derived it. This is what we found out, okay? So let me elaborate on that. Here's a transmission line. It's a distributed circuit, and it's a different sort of a thing than a lump circuit. Okay, but you find at the end of the two ends of the transmission line some lump circuit. For instance, there may be a generator circuit on one side. There might be a load circuit, R sub L. Okay, right here, including this element, and a pair of terminals. Okay. Those terminals happen to be the input terminals of the transmission line. You apply lump circuit analysis of ECE 210. The same way here, okay, right here, with respect to this pair of terminals. Every pair of terminals is going to be associated with a voltage drop that is defined from one terminal to the other. And there is also going to be a current coming out and going back in, okay? In the world of lump circuits, elements conduct the same current whether you look at the resistor current on the top node or the bottom node, it's the same current. So there's going to be one current coming out from this node and go back. So here and here we have the lump circuit analysis, and what dominates here is KVL, KCL, Ohm's law. Or generalized Ohm's law if we have capacitors and inductors written in terms of the impedances. All right? So KVL, KCL, and Ohm's law governs here. And here, they don't govern anything, okay? Because on this wire, the current is not necessarily the same at every location. The current is changing as a function of position. And what is governing that region is the telegrapher's equations, derived from Maxwell's equations. And the solution of telegrapher's equations is given over here. It is always a summation of a forward-going and backward-going waves, okay? Once we say that F and G represent forward and backward going waves for the voltage, then we derive the corresponding current. And we derive this by going to one of the telegrapher's equations, and we found that there is a minus sign. And division by Z sub zero. We derive this. So these were derived results. Okay? There are many ways of logically looking at it. Why is it like that? Because the equation tells you that.
Also, even a better one is I associate my voltage waveform with electric fields and my current waveform with magnetic fields in the ways that I have described. I already know that when I have an electric field whose pointing in x direction, the corresponding h is going to point either in plus y direction or minus y direction, depending whether it's forward propagating or backwards propagating. That sign difference is what is inherited in this expression with the minus sign. So this is a derived result. The math gives us this, but when we get it, as I pointed out at that point, it already is consistent with a lot of things that we know. So therefore we learn, okay? So you just learn these things, just like you learn once upon a time KBL, KCL, and Ohm's law. You learn these things, and then you apply on transmission line these rules, on lump circuits you apply these rules, you're good from then on. Okay, so once upon a time, you were also shown that the impedance of an inductor, C, is equal to J omega L. How did you see this? Well, somebody derived it for you. Your professor in EC 210 derived this to you, okay, for you. And maybe the first day it was foreign. Maybe the second day you came back to class and the professor just used this and you were puzzled. Where did it come from? Well, if you asked the professor, he was going to say, hey, I derived it, learn it, okay? So now, after a year, after 210, most of you feel very comfortable with this, right? Nobody's asking where did J omega L came from. You sort of know where it came from. So hopefully one day, soon, you will say that I's are differences divided by Z naughts, and V's are the pluses, the sum. It will become equally sort of, it's very easy, you know? We have easy rules in circuit analysis. You would all agree that KVL, KCL, and Ohm's law are very easy to apply. Once you get over the sign confusion, they are very easy to apply. Well, transmission lines have equally easy rules to apply. It's just this plus and minus, plus for the voltage, minus for the current. And then, of course, there has to be a Z0 because the unit of current cannot be the unit of voltage, so you need a translation scaling constant. And that scaling constant turns out to be the characteristic impedance of the line. So that's it. So I said this several times yesterday to different students, so then I decided I should better say it to everyone so that we are all on the same page. Any questions? Okay, so we're going to continue, all right? So this was a few lectures ago. So now, of course, Akash missed it all, and he's going to come ask me, why is current has a minus sign there? And I'm going to go blow off. I said, current, because I derived it, Akash, I derived it. And you have to go back to the derivation. And also, it makes sense. All right. All right. We went through all this stuff. We even did this. This is still your homework that you are working on due 5 today, I believe. Okay, so then we started talking about periodic oscillation in lossless transmission line circuits. In a lossless LC circuit, which is a lump circuit, we know that there is a resonance at the sort of like favorite frequency of omega naught equal 1 over square root of LC, and that becomes an important parameter in filter circuits using either series or parallel LC combinations in conjunction with other stuff like resistors, current sources, and whatnot. Okay? So it turns out that you can take transmission line sections of some length, and we typically call these things stub, and terminate them either with opens or shorts. See, opens or shorts are not dissipative elements. If you put a 25 ohm resistor or a 50 ohm resistor, then you turn the stub plus the resistor into a lossy animal. But if you take an ideal transmission line and terminate it either with a short or an open, there is nothing in that system that is dissipative. So they become sort of like analogous to L's and C's in some sense. Okay, and it turns out that such shorted stubs or open stubs of ideal transmission lines are resonant, and not only at a single frequency, 1 over square root of LC, but there are infinite number of resonant frequencies associated with them. So then if you take a stub and insert it in a transmission, in a regular circuit, as if it's an element, okay? It is a distributed circuit, but it has two terminals at which we can look at it as if it were a lump circuit for that local analysis, just like we are doing here. Then these stubs play an important role. They can many roles, okay? Comb filters, etc. So this is what we want to examine and learn as we go along. Okay. All right, so what are we going to do? We started the analysis of a stub that is open circuited at both ends, and we wanted to write down the voltage and current waveforms that you can observe on such things. in its most general form. Because there is no source, you attribute whatever current or voltage there is to an initial condition. At before t equals 0, there was some source, and then you ripped it off. But you let, at t equals 0, the system go be sort of like proceed, evolve, already containing some sort of energy, right? That energy is going to not be lost because there is no dissipation, and there will be periodic oscillation in this forever. And this is what we want to understand by analyzing this, okay? And we started a very general approach, okay? Because the two ends are open, the pertinent boundary conditions are the current at the two ends are equal to zero. So that's why we started saying, hey, let's write down the most general current expression for this transmission line and set it equal to zero on both ends. This is why I started by saying my I of ZT is F minus G divided by Z zero. And this is why, perhaps at the end of last lecture, some students came, hey, why do you write this? Now I explain why minus, right? You are also one of them. We discuss in the office. All right, so far so good. Now I take that general expression on the top and evaluate it at Z equals zero. But at Z equals zero, the current is equal to zero. So I get this intermediate equation, which immediately tells me G must be the same as F. Okay, that's one thing I learned. The other thing is I evaluate the same expression at Z equals L, and that also has to be equal to zero. So now I have to satisfy these two equations. The fact that G and F are the same thing allows me to write the second condition only in terms of Fs, okay? And then I do a redefinition of time to create a T prime, and later on I drop the prime. By the time I am finished, I have seen that this constraint of Fs on both sides become this constraint of Fs. F of t is identical to its shifted counterpart, where there is a shift of 2L over V, which is, of course, the time delay for two-way travel time from one end to the end and then come back, okay? But, of course, mathematically speaking, a function that is abiding by this recipe for all times t is necessarily periodic, and it has a period 2L over V. Okay, so now what that means is we can go back to our general current expression and can stick the same formula, same F, this G becomes F, one is delayed with minus, one is delayed with plus, one is forward propagating, one is backward propagating, but the two Fs that I'm using in both locations have to be periodic, and I know it's periodicity. So now I have constrained myself a little bit more, and I will move on with that constraint. Period is 2L over V, and there is a fundamental frequency associated with it, omega naught. 2 pi over t works out to be pi V over L, okay? So all integer multiples of this frequency are going to be participant in Fourier series representing this F of t, which is periodic, okay? That F of t consists of a Fourier series with frequencies omega naught and its integer multiples. And I write that here in the compact trigonometric form. Okay, so my F of t can, in general, have a DC term, and then all these AC terms. N goes from 1 to infinity, some amplitude F sub n, cosine n omega naught t, and some phase term, perhaps. Okay, and I'm free to choose whatever I like for theta sub n, F sub n's, all right? And depending what I choose, I construct different types of periodic signals. Some will look like triangles, others may look like rectangles and whatnot, just like you've seen in ECE210. All these things are possibilities. Okay, so now what is the next step? The next step is to substitute this guy after t has been replaced with plus and minus t plus and minus is z over v into the equation that we have for the current, and then see what happens. And that's what I do. And when I do substitute that, because there is a minus sign, this F naught plays no role. This F naught gets canceled out right away because of the minus sign. What doesn't get canceled out are these things, because they have time delays, and that those times are changed into different times. One is forward delayed, one is backward delayed, and because of that, we have to now do some trigonometry, or we can do some phasor stuff. Okay, so I do my substitution. The DC terms die out. Okay, and I'm left with this expression. Now, after I make my replacement of t into t minus or plus z over v, and then after that gets multiplied with omega naught, because omega naught is going to multiply my t, I'm going to have expressions such as omega naught divided by V. And I'm going to call those things betas, beta naught. So I'm defining beta naught here, which is omega naught divided by the propagation velocity, which is probably the speed of light if you are using a transmission line with air filling. Otherwise, it's something like 2 times 10 to the 8 or something like that, typical values. Okay, so that is the beta that shows up here. Okay, I do my substitution. Now I have cosine n omega naught t, the phase shift, but now minus n beta 0 z and plus n beta 0 z. Is everybody with me? Are we on the same wavelength? David, are you following what I'm saying? Okay, so I factor out a little bit. Then I have to combine these two cosines. I have to combine these cosines, and I have to scratch my head, remember some trig identities, or say, hey, why do I do that? Let's just go into the phasor domain and come back. Okay? So what do? Well, I have a cosine function of time. I can certainly like corresponding phasor for this. I can write the corresponding phasor for that. The phasor itself is not going to have the time term in it, but it is going to have all the phase shifts. One of those phase shifts is going to be theta sub n, but the other phase shifts are n beta naught times z. Those are also phase shifts, right? If I do that, here's the phasor way of writing the same thing. Okay, time went away. I pulled out the common e to the j theta n, and I have the z-dependent terms coming out. All right, so this is an infinite summation. So I'm doing something quite not right here. Can somebody tell me what is it that I'm not quite doing right? You don't really add the phasors of different frequencies. If you go back to ECE 2.10, you don't do that, okay? I shouldn't have a summation sign. Instead, I should say, these are I sub n's, okay, without the summation signs, okay? But you have two different ones. One is for forward-going wave, one for backward-going wave for the same frequency, n times omega naught. Those are combined. And when those are combined, what is combined is inside the summation sign, and you are poised to recognize that as a sine function, okay? But I have put the summation outside, okay? So take it as a sort of it's a warning, okay? I'm misusing the notation a little bit. Why is it that I cannot add the phases of different frequencies here? Because then I violate my rule. How do I go from phasor back to time domain? I multiply my phasor with e to the j omega t, okay? But now if I sum them, where all the implied associated omegas are different, one is omega naught, the other is twice omega naught, three times omega naught, my rule becomes confusing. What am I going to multiply to go back to the time domain, okay? Well, if I promise myself that I will actually multiply everything under the summation sign with the proper frequency, n times omega naught, then I can get away with it. So I play a private trick there, okay? You guys should also could do this, all right? In order to make your notation or algebra faster. Are you okay? Anybody confused by what I said? It is really, if you go back to ECE 2.10, in multi-frequency circuits, you do superposition, you suppress each of the frequencies, all the sources except for one, solve it by phasor, get the phasor, turn it into time domain, then you collect all such results corresponding to each of the sources with the different frequencies, and then you add the result in the time domain. You don't add them in the frequency domain. And I'm not really adding them in frequency domain, it's just like I have a lousy notation here. But I am also in control of what's going on. David, did I confuse you, or are you following what I'm saying?
No, following that.
Good. All right, so basically, I turn this into a sine function because this is a conjugated combo, but the combo is not a plus, it is a minus. So I have to divide this by 2j, multiply it with 2j, and recognize it to be a sine function. In fact, recognize it to be a minus sine function because this is what's in the front is a negative sign. That accounts for this minus 2j here. Okay? This thing has disappeared into a trig form. Now to go into time domain, I say this has to go back into the time domain as a sine or a cosine function. It would have gone back to the time domain as a cosine function had it been a real number. But there is a minus j sitting in front of it, and because of that, it's going to go back into time domain as a, not as a cosine function, but as a sine function, okay? And of course, the theta ends up being the phase shift in that expression. So hopefully, despite this dirty little trick here, you exactly follow what happened here. Okay, I didn't want to deal with trigonometry, so therefore I use phasors in a rapid way. in a fast way. Any questions? So now, what is it? I reached my conclusion. This is my current waveform. This is very general, okay? Evidently though, anything that is going to be consistent with the D'Alembert constraints, as well as having two terminations that are open-circuited, is going to force us to have current waveforms in these source-free stops that are only and only expressed by this type of a sound. Okay? But we are free, whatever f sub n and theta sub n to choose. Okay? For each choice of theta sub n and f sub n, we're going to end up with different waveforms that are bouncing around as current waveforms on the transmission line. We can force them to be rectangles, we can force them to be triangles or whatnot. Or we can even force them to be delta functions in, if that's what we want. Okay? So this is very general. But then we say that what is very general is a superposition of very specific things. When I see these things, two sine waves multiplying like this, where time is in one of the signs and the position z is in the other sign, and they are not together anymore in the D'Alembert form, I say this is a standing wave. Basically, these are standing waves. So for n equals to 1, 2, 3, etc., if we were to plot this variation over the transmission line, we're going to see that we have a half a sine wave fitting between the two nodes, a full sine wave fitting between the two nodes. By nodes, I mean the two terminations of the stop, or three of them, or four of them, etc. That's what I'm going to see. And the n equals 1 corresponds to half a sine wave, half a wavelength of a sine wave fitting onto my transmission line. So I should maybe draw a picture at this point. Two ends open circuited. Currents have to go to zero at the two ends. I can have many, many different oscillations with different frequencies, but not all. They are discretized. Okay? They are discretized such that when I consider my length L of my transmission line, okay, for the lowest mode, n equal to 1, I am going to have a variation of I of zt. At some time t, 0, this is a snapshot picture, there is going to be a variation of I from 0 to the other 0, okay, as a function of z. If I were to take this function and plot it as a function of z, at z equals 0, this is 0, then for the case n equals 1, okay, I'm going to go to pi. My beta naught times z is going to become pi when z becomes L, and I'm going to have exactly this response. This is n equals 1. Okay, n equals 2 is going to do this. This is n equals to 2. Plotting that over there. So we have to, of course, remember what beta was. Beta naught was. Beta naught structure is ensuring this. Okay? What was beta naught? Beta naught was pi over L. Okay, so when we substitute that beta naught is pi over L into here, okay, and I evaluate this at L, L's cancel out, and pi. Okay, so for every n, I'm going to end up with one value of sine n pi at the end, at z equals L, and n pi sine is always equal to, say, 0, exactly 0. So for all these modes, I basically, my most general mode, my most general answer for permissible current variation that are periodic is nothing other than weighted superpositions of fundamental modes of the system that are cosinusoidal. We have infinite number of them. Every one of them is a resonant frequency. Okay? And the n equals 3 goes like this, etc., etc., etc. So what are these frequencies? Well, I think I have a formula there for these frequencies, but I already forget that formula. So let me derive the formula once again. What I am observing here, which is most important, is that this L seems to be an integer multiple of lambda over 2. Okay? So for the resonant modes, L matches an integer number, and let's call this n, times lambda over 2. But what is lambda? Lambda times f is equal to c, or the propagation velocity v in general. So lambda in general is therefore v divided by f. Okay? So now, why don't I just take this F to the other side and put L on the bottom. So if I do that, I obtain the following equation. Okay? So F goes to this side, N stays here, B stays here, 2L. I have a formula for all the resonant frequencies. Okay, of course I can multiply this by 2 pi, turn it into corresponding omegas. And this is true with N equals 1, 2, 3, all the way to infinity. These are all the resonant frequencies. Any one of these integer n's is going to correspond to a possible oscillation that may be sustained indefinitely on this lossless transmission line stuff with two open ends. Is this clear? So while LC circuit has one resonance, a stub of any length that is distributed has infinite number of resonant frequencies, and they are all relevant. Questions? Okay, so maybe it's time to see a movie.
You always see movies, right? But I really like this movie. This one I really like. I have N equals 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay? What is significant here is that the higher order modes have shorter wavelengths and higher frequencies. Okay? So as N increases, the wavelength gets smaller, and also they go like this fast. Okay? Focus on, and the animation is a little bit chunky so that it is hard to see. But look at the blue curve. Certainly the blue curve, N equals 1, is oscillating with the lowest frequency. The other ones are oscillating faster and faster. Okay? So then you have learned something, okay? If I have a lossless system, I can construct an arbitrary periodic signal that goes back and forth on this system as a current waveform. And I will be building these always by adding up these normal modes that I have just discovered. And their characteristic is that as their orders are large, they oscillate fast, and they also change in space fast. They basically, high order means that they change in both space and time in a fast manner. That's what it is. Any questions? Okay, so then, but this is all current now, right? What about voltage? We should be able to get voltage from current. We can go back and do the same calculation again. Instead of a minus sign, we'll have a plus sign, etc. And because we have a plus sign instead of a sign, what do you think we're going to have? We're going to have a cosine. And we're also going to lack our 2j divider. Because we don't introduce a j in the time domain, instead of a sign, what are we going to have? Yeah, so it's going to be a cos-cos animal instead of a sin-sin animal, okay? And that's going to accompany the current, which is sin-sin. Voltage is cos-cos. Now, if you started with a stub that was shorted at both ends, things would turn around and the voltage would be sin-sin and current would be cos-cos. All right, so, and the frequencies of all those combos is always obtained by this observation. L has to be an integer multiple of lambda over 2 because of the boundary conditions. Now, there is one more resonant circuit, which is a stub that is shorted at one end and open-circuited at the other end. Okay, now if you think about it, okay, that length has to be related to not lambda over 2, but lambda over 4, because sine curve will start from 0 and reach its peak. Okay, if you have a short there, the current doesn't have to go to 0. Actually, the short voltage has to go to 0. It just turns out that in the second type of resonators, it's the length has to be an integer multiple of lambda over 4. And not only an integer multiple of lambda over 4, it turns out that an odd integer, odd multiple of lambda over 4. Okay, we haven't done the math for this, but I'm telling all this stuff so that you can see the movie. That was open-open modes. Here's an open-short mode movie. Nothing much surprising, right? But in this case, that L corresponds to a quarter wavelength or odd multiples of quarter wavelengths. Any questions? All right. So we are done with the movies. Going back. So, but how else can we do this derivation of the V? The other way we can do is we can take our I solution and stick it into one of the telegrapher's equations. Do we remember telegrapher's equations? We saw them and we forget about them. But let me remind them to you, at least one of them.
the other one follows. V equals LdI dt is the VI relationship for an inductor, right? Okay? But for the corresponding telegrapher's equation, V equals L di dt, but this is not V. This is instead dv, d?
C.
Exactly. And not only that, but there is a minus sign. Okay? So certainly if you know I, you can take its derivative, and then you have dv dz, okay? And then you can integrate that or find the antiderivative to get V. By the time you're done, this result shows up. Actually though, this is missing one possibility. Out of all infinites, this is missing one possibility. Which one is that?
DC component.
Yes, exactly. In the voltage one, the DC component is not going to cancel out, and you can actually have a DC sitting forever. So that's a possibility. You cannot have a DC current, but you can have a DC one. We don't typically talk about the DC solution as a resonant mode. This is just a DC possibility. For resonance, we enumerate N equals 1, 2, 3, etc. Any questions? All right, what else do I want to say about these resonant modes? So, I am sort of skipping the details. Let's catch it here. What if we have a transmission? Oh, okay, so let me make another important point, which is very important, and I'm just forgetting it. Because voltage is cos-cos and current is sin-sin, okay, in all these resonant modes, okay, there is going to be between successive nulls of the current waveforms and voltage waveforms that are different by lambda over 2. While this is a fact, okay, successive nulls, null means zero, or successive peaks of the current and voltage waveforms are going to be lambda 4 apart. That just follows because one is abiding sine variation with Z, the other is abiding cosine variation with Z, and sine and cosines are 90 degrees out of phase, and that corresponds to lambda over 4. Okay? So each of these allowed modes for voltage and current are standing wave patterns, but they are standing wave patterns that are shifted with respect to one another by a lambda over 4. Okay? Because of that, we find a variation of the behavior of a short at one termination of a stub by the time you get to the other side and open, okay? A lambda over 4 or odd multiples of this, okay? Or alternatively, we will say, if we have a stub and we have a short here, if at the given frequency this happens to be a lambda over 4, or an odd multiple of lambda over 4. While we have a short here, we are going to have, say it, a short turns into a guess. Short turns into a, what can it turn? Either itself or the opposite. Open, yes. A short turns into an open when you travel lambda over 4. But if you travel lambda over 2, a short turns into a short again. Because short has nulls, that is zero voltages, okay, that are separated from by one another by lambda over 2 or its integer multiple. So if you look at a length of a transmission line that is shorted at one end and it happens to be a lambda over 4, you see an open. If this is lambda over 2, you see a short again. And what does it mean to see a short again on this side? What it means is that, just like the other end, there is going to be zero voltage over there. Zero voltage over there. That means that if this is lambda over 2 and you include this in a circuit with other elements, there is going to be a zero voltage over here. Okay? And if it's zero voltage, let's make this more clear and so you guys can follow what I'm talking about. Let's turn it into this. Suppose that we have a voltage source, 5 volts. This is a phasor, so think of it 5 times cosine omega t. At the right omega, such that compare given that wavelength, okay, then the stub that I have that is shorted at one end is exactly lambda over 2, okay, and then I have a 2 ohm resistor, okay. You can analyze this circuit exactly now because Because this is lambda over 2, this is still a short. If this is a short here, so looking into here, we see a short. We don't see an open, even though you're actually connecting a transmission line that has two parallel wires, and the short is lambda over 2 away, it is as if there is a short there, in the sense that there is going to be no voltage here. If there is no voltage here, this 5 volt is going to appear across here, right? This is 5 cosine omega naught t, and that's going to be completely appearing across here. If it's appearing across here, there's going to be 5 divided by 2 amount of current flowing through there. And that current, of course, has to flow through here. That's the AC current. At these terminals, the stub is looking like a short, as if, okay, I might as well replace it with a short here. Yank it out, replace it with a short, it's the same thing. But if I change the frequency, this point is no longer a short. I can also make it an open. So if I lower my frequency, the same length of transmission line is going to become a lambda over 4. Okay? The moment that happens, this short translates into an open. When it's an open, it means that it cannot take in any current, right? An open cannot take in any current. So this current is therefore turned off. This current is turned off. There is no voltage drop across here. And then the entire 5 volt cosine omega naught appears across here. Okay, so a transmission line stub of some length L that is either open circuited or short circuited is going to behave differently at different frequencies. Okay, and there is going to be variation going from open to short, open to short, open to short, as you are changing your frequency in a continuous manner, that then lends itself to this comp filter type of application that I was alluding to. So that is something that you should keep in mind. Any questions here?
All right.
How can one get source-free oscillation in transmission lines? I give an answer here. This is the same answer I gave before. Sometime before the t equals 0, there was some connection to an energy source. That's nothing unusual. So I think that's the end of that lecture. So what do we do in the next lecture?
I think in the next lecture, we sort of elaborate a little bit more on what I have just said. Okay? So here's a summary. And not only a summary, a sort of a comparison of the lumped world versus unlumped world. On the top, we have two LC resonators. One is a series LC resonator. The other is an open LC resonator. If the series LC resonator is used in a circuit, at the resonant frequency, that combo becomes a short, okay? It becomes a short. The parallel combo becomes open, okay? We have just seen that a shorter or open circuited stub transmission line, as you go through its various resonant frequencies, will sometimes act like an open, sometimes it will act like a short. Okay? When it acts like a short, when our transmission line stub looks from the circuit like it is a short, we're going to say that it is behaving analogous to the series resonator, because series resonator exhibits a short. Okay? So half the resonances of this microwave stub resonator we will designate as series resonances. The remaining half is when it will appear like an open. An open behavior is the parallel behavior. Parallel resonator, LC resonator, acts like an open. So the remaining half of the resonant frequencies in which the stub looks like an open circuit from the perspective of the circuit, we will associate them with the word parallel resonances. Parallel resonances and these series resonances. What are the resonant frequencies? We have formulas for those resonant frequencies. Now, I developed the resonant frequencies here for a shorter stub. For purposes of discussion in this lecture, the emphasis is on the shorter stub, but you could have started with an open stub as well, okay? But with the shorter stub, okay, we know that we are going to have this behavior. The short will turn into an open after lambda over 4, or integer multiples of that. And we developed a formula here for those resonant frequencies. And that development is exactly following the logic that we have over here. So let me repeat that. Okay? So we have an element like this. Okay? We are going to specifically put a short there. So voltage has to be 0 there. Okay? But the current has to be 0 on this side, right? Because there is an open here. So that means that this
particular stub of land L has to match in order to satisfy boundary condition of each type. Remember that the successive peaks and successive nulls of voltage and current waveforms are separated by lambda over 4. Okay, so given that, we are going to have this L matching lambda over 4 or its odd multiples. For odd multiples, what do we put? 1 plus 2n. Okay? This certainly is going to satisfy the boundary condition for n equal to 0, but it is also going to satisfy it for n equals 1, 2, 3. Okay? Because every one of these are giving me the odd condition, so then I designate this as n equals 0, 1, 2, 3. Okay? So this is the accompanying formula. We had previously a resonant frequency formula that was associated with lambda over 2 multiples, now quarter wave multiples with the odd case. And let's turn this into a frequency equation. Lambda is V divided by frequency. I use the same trick. I take the V onto the other side, and so it becomes F here, and V on the top, 4L, and then 1 plus 2N, and that is true for N equals 0, 1, 2, 3, etc. Okay, and what was the other equation? The other equation, I believe, was V divided by 2L times N, and that is for N equals 1, 2, 3. So basically, we have then two sets of resonant frequencies that we can associate with these types of instruments, and I have a plot somewhere that designates the entire behavior on a frequency axis. Okay? So I draw this F axis, set my zero at one end, and then I have V over 2L, okay, and then N times that, twice, three times, etc. These are all series resonances, and series resonances means that at the input terminal, the resonator looks like a short, the way a series LC combination behaves at its resonance, okay? Now, the short to open variation gave us this formula, and that formula is giving me the red crosses. Red crosses are occurring at V over 4L, but not twice that, but three times that, etc., etc. So now we have the series resonances and parallel resonances are sort of like coming one after the other in an interlaced sort of a way. And those parallel resonances is the stub, shorted stub is looking like at the input terminal like a open, the way a parallel LC resonator looks at its resonance frequency. Okay? So this behavior looking like an open or short for the parallel and the series resonance for the LC circuit occurs at one and the same frequency. But for these resonators, they occur at different frequencies, not at the same frequency, and not at a single different frequency. Each behavior is exhibited countless times, an infinite number of times. Any questions? So then, I accept the fact that, according to this picture, when I look into a shorted stub of some L, some land, depending on my frequency, sometimes I will see an open, sometimes I will see a short. But in between the shorts and opens, it should look like something else. If it's not short, if it's not open, at some other frequencies, what kind of an impedance am I going to have? Any guesses? Well, you can't. We have to derive it. And then somebody is going to say, where did you get this from? I'm going to say, I derived it. But even before we derive it, we can make one statement about the impedance that we expect in between these frequencies. At these frequencies, we either have infinity or zero for our impedance. Okay? And in between frequencies, what mathematical property do you expect that impedance to have? Perhaps. Guess. Does this system have a dissipation element in it, the way I built it? No. If it doesn't have a dissipation element, what are the dissipationless lump circuits that we know? Capacitors and inductors. What is the property of their impedance? As opposed to the impedance of a resistor. A resistor has a real. And lossless elements such as capacitors and inductors, which store energy and then they give back their energies, they have impedances that are purely imaginary. And since in this system I have not built in any dissipation, it's going to store energy, but it will give its energy back. So therefore, this is going to have an impedance that is purely imaginary. Exactly. So this is what we expect, and now we have to derive it. And what we're going to derive not only is going to be purely imaginary, but it's also going to be periodic. How do we know that it's periodic? Because it's periodically going in the frequency domain through zeros and infinities, zeros and infinities. It also has to be compliant with that order. Okay? So there has to be some function that is imaginary and periodic, and it goes all the way from zero to infinity, back to zero infinity, back to zero infinity. What kind of a function is that? Tangent function or cotangent, something like that, yes. So you're going to find a J tangent beta Z type of behavior. Beta Z, what is beta? Beta is omega divided by L, and Z is the length, beta L. All right, so it's time to do the derivation. So I gave you some physical insight before I do the derivation. Did you follow it, Elmo? We need an impedance, and at this point we might as well review what an impedance is. What is an impedance? B to I ratio in some sense, okay? But what is an impedance in the phasor domain? It's specifically the phasor ratio. Of course, in the time domain, we don't have impedances. We just have resistances. Ohm laws lends itself into a sort of a V to I ratio, okay? But we cannot have a V to I ratio directly, algebraically, if I have a capacitor, because their VI relationship is not like that. There is a derivative involved. So we don't like that. We invent the phasor concept. In the phasor concept, that VI relationship becomes an algebraic relationship, then V to I phasor ratio. Okay? So in general, then, we should be associating the word impedance with the phasor VI ratio. That's what we want to have. Okay? But then, which V and which I? Actually, total V and total I that you see on the transmission line. Because now there is this distinction of V and I, to total V and total I, are the superpositions of forward-going and backward-going ones, okay? But the name impedance is really relevant to the total one, okay? So that's what we're going to enforce. But there is an exception to this. Z-naught, if you will, is the ratio of the forward-going V to I, or Z naught, if you wish, is the impedance that is the ratio of backward going V to I, except for there is a minus sign there. Okay? So, characteristic impedance, therefore, is something different. That is why we are not calling it just impedance, but we are saying it is the characteristic impedance. Characteristic impedance relates the amplitudes, voltage and current amplitudes of purely traveling waves. All right? But the impedance that we are now going to calculate is going to be the V to I ratio of not necessarily a traveling wave. It's going to be a combination of forward and backward going wave, and forward and backward going wave can be having same amplitudes to generate a totally standing wave situation, which is the situation where we have a short terminating a transmission line. Because with a short, what is the reflection coefficient? John, with a short, the reflection coefficient is?
Minus one.
Why is that? That's because impedance that you are banging into minus your characteristic impedance divided by the sum. The impedance that you are banging into when you have a short is equal to
zero.
So zero is disappeared as a minus sign. Right? So minus one is the reflection coefficient, and that reflection coefficient at the short ensures that the voltage is equal to zero, but the current is whatever that short can transmit. Okay. But then you go quarter wave away from it, that short becomes an open at the input terminal. This is the discussion that we are having. Okay, so now, but we want to move on that discussion to the next level. We want to derive the impedance looking in at an arbitrary frequency. A very easy derivation. Let's just go through that, and then we'll stop. So here we go. I say, on my transmission line, at cosinusoidal steady state, at a single frequency. This is how I define my frequency. I'm going to write down the total voltage and current phasors, and I'll take their ratio and see whether I get a tangent function out of it. Okay? So basically then, in cosinusoidal steady state, I write my total D'Alembert solution in terms of the real part of phasors, e to the j omega t. Okay? And there, I am using both forward and backward delayed versions, because that's the D'Alembert. Okay, the way I'm writing
it is consistent with the D'Alembert form, but because I am taking a specific exponential function, real part and whole shebang, because of Euler's identity, these are cosinusoidal fields. We might as well, if this is what we are dealing with, recognize my phasors to be as shown. How do I do that? To show the rest, I have to pull this. Okay, so I have a voltage phasor, which is V plus times e to the minus j beta z, plus B minus times e to the plus j beta z, okay? The one that has e to the plus j beta z, we recognize as a backward going wave. The other is the forward going wave, okay? All consistent with everything we've learned in this class, okay? The notation hasn't done anything bad. Corresponding I, what do? I take this guy, instead of adding, I subtract. Why? Because we derived it, okay? And then I also have to divide by z naught. So that is my current. Okay, so now I'm going to take their ratio. All right? Now, before I take their ratio, however, maybe I'm going to change my notation. Yeah, it's time for that weird notation change that always hits the students. Now, we are changing our standards. Okay? So far, we have always placed the source circuit at z equal to 0 and the load circuit at z equals L. As we are moving from the domain of time domain analysis into frequency domain analysis, and that's where we are going, we've adopted phasors, the tradition is to move this zero of our coordinate system to where the load is. Okay, from now on, load is located at z equal to zero, and then the generator is located at some negative value of z. Okay? And sometimes that generator may be very far away. Okay, sometimes we don't care. In this case, we don't have the generator, but we have the input port in which this stuff is going to be connected into a circuit containing the generator and maybe some other elements, a capacitor, voltage source, and so forth. Okay, so that is going to be located at z equals minus L, where L is a distance, the length of the line. So that makes sense, doesn't it? So that's change number one. Change number two, okay? For reasons to become clear, not only do we change the location of the zero, we define a new coordinate system that we call D. The D axis runs opposite to the Z axis. And now we say that actually the source circuit is sitting at D equals L rather than at Z equals minus L. Okay, this is the way a lot of literature was worked out. A lot of textbooks are written, so we abide, okay? So part of engineering is to keep our language the same as the language people who did this stuff before us. Okay, so if that is the case, so I have to write my phasors once again. While here, I was having minus j beta z. That minus j beta z is going into plus j beta d, because z and d axis are running opposite to one another. And then the one that went e to the j plus beta z is going to run e to the minus j beta d. So a new convention. From now on, if we are working in the d coordinate system, okay, all our intuitions that we built up were plus and minus propagating waves have switched around. E to the j beta d, okay, is now expressing a voltage that is propagating from the source towards the load. Forward propagating wave is e to the plus j beta d. Maybe there is a constellation on that, right? Forward propagating plus, backward propagating minus. That's the new wave. Is that okay, physicist? Physicists say, why do electrical engines go through such things? Because we have to actually build stuff. We just don't dream stuff. And when you are building stuff, you have to specify it right so that the technician builds it correctly. Something like that. So we have to be a little bit disciplined. All right, so, did I run out of time? I ran out of time. I'm gonna take the ratio of those I and V expressions, and that's gonna give me a tangent function. You can see that, because one has a minus, one has a plus, one will turn into a cosine, the other will turn into a sine, and sine to cosine ratio is a tangent. So, see you guys tomorrow in the exam, in the material science building room 100.